This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
So then I said, more like the woke of time. Am I right? Sorry, the show started. Hey, everybody. My name is Dan Selke here with Daniel Roman. We are the two co-hosts of Take the Black Live, the show we go through over all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, wheels, time, stars, wars, and strangers who come to your snowy hometown and beat you to death with golf clubs. How you doing today, Daniel Roman?
I'm doing good. I'm hoping that last one does not happen to me, because that sounds pretty harrowing, but I know it happened to someone this week, and thus we're going to talk about it. I'm doing good. How are you, Dan?
I'm great as always. As usual, we are awash in things to talk about. Hello, everyone watching. Hello, Ben. Hello, Martha. Hello, everyone in the chat. If all of you newcomers want to comment, we love hearing it. We love hearing from you. And hopefully there'll be some opinions today, because we have a decent amount of things to go over.
We do.
I assume eventually the TV glut will stop, but we're going to talk about the latest episode of The Last of Us, which was a barn burner, a very famous moment from the world of video games, making the leap to the television. We're going to talk about the season finale of The Wheel of Time, another barn burner.
It was
a classic fantasy book, finally getting turned into a really excellent hour of television, and where that might go next. The second and final season of Star Wars Andor just dropped. I watched all of that. And
all of the season or just all of what's out?
They released, I watched the first three episodes they've released. Like between, I didn't like watch them super closely and kind of put them on in the background while I did other things. I didn't have time.
You
I can't watch three episodes of Andor.
They
came out last night. I don't have the time to sit down and absorb them all. I have work to do. I have stuff. I did the best I could.
That's fair. That's all we ever ask.
It is. So we'll talk about that. But first, let's really briefly visit Westeros, where there is some news on the House of the Dragon front. Daniel, what news on the House of the Dragon front? And Zach, thank you for saying you love us. We love you, too.
It's true. So this news just broke shortly before we're recording this show here on Wednesday, around 3-ish p.m. ET, 2 p.m. CT. Watch us live. So House of the Dragon, the currently running Game of Thrones prequel series, which we talk about a lot here on this show, titled Take the Black, because if you couldn't have guessed, Westeros is a big part of what we do. House of the Dragon just got 3 new cast members. And because it just got 3 new cast members and we have a podcast today, obviously we want to make sure all of you faithful listeners, viewers, and friends are aware of these castings. So here they are. I'm going to run through them quick and then we can kind of talk a little bit about who they are before we get into the main body of the show today. So English actor Barry Sloan, who was in Revenge and Six, will play Sir Adrian Redfort, who is a member of Queen Rhaenyra Targaryen's Queensguard. Welsh actor Tom Cullen, who was in Nightfall and Downton Abbey, is playing Sir Luther Largent, who is a commander of the City Watch in King's Landing.
True.
And then this next one is probably the one I think is the most exciting of these three castings. So English actor Joplin Sibtain, I'm so sorry if I said your name wrong, who plays Brasso in Star Wars Andor, coincidentally, is playing Sir Bold John Roxton, who is a knight fighting for Queen Rhaenyra's rival, King Aegon II Targaryen. And I believe he is involved in the campaign in the Reach. In the book Fire and Blood, and has a Valyrian steel sword named Orphan Maker, because you have to name these swords dramatic names. Something tells me that Joffrey Baratheon would approve of that name. I can't remember if he joked about that name, because I know there are a few he joked about on Thrones.
I want to say he suggested the name Widowmaker for some.
You're right. You're totally right.
Orphans.
He would have approved, let's just say.
Your Valyrian steel sword. How about Orphanage Thunder?
Yeah. So anyway, those are the three castings we have. Dan, do you have any thoughts on these?
I mean, not especially. It's giving us more about the shape of the next season. Kind of confirm what we already know. The first two characters both kind of come into play after, pause for spoiler, Rhaenyra takes over King's Landing. They're kind of part of her retinue. So
yeah,
we knew that's coming, and now we know even more that that's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bold John Roxton is a part of kind of Daeron Targaryen's march toward King's Landing, which we also knew or thought was coming.
Yeah,
so with
totally.
Orm and Hightower there together, and now we know even more that those things are going to happen. But it's cool. It's happening. It'll come out next year. They're filming right now. Good for them. I'm happy for them, and I hope be happy for me when the episodes air and I enjoy them.
Yeah, totally. It is, like you said, these are the most interesting thing about these castings to me is obviously confirming the things we already know, right? Like you said, we already knew, like the positive spoilers, that Queen Rhaenyra is going to be taking King's Landing this season, because that's basically like one of the next things that happens in Fire and Blood. I expected that to happen at the end of season two, but then season two lost two episodes and they never got to do it. I'm assuming it's going to happen fairly early in season three.
Yeah.
So getting castings for her retinue once she's in King's Landing, as well as for Daeron's group, it does start to, if not tell us the shape of the season really at all, just really tell us we can safely get excited to see some of these very important plot lines dramatized this season, which they had to be, hopefully with some sort of fidelity to the text. But yeah, so good news all around for House of the Dragon. I like that they are announcing more castings, and I'm sure, you know, now that it is filming, we'll eventually get some more. So now that we've talked about Westeros, we need to talk about the shows that we're watching right now. And there are a few big ones, like Dan mentioned at the top of the show. So this is, we're going to ring a big honking spoiler warning here.
Sure.
We are going to be spoiling the second episode of The Last of Us season two, which aired this past Sunday. And we are going to be spoiling the season finale of The Wheel of Time season three, which aired the previous Thursday. Let's start with The Last of Us. This was a big episode. Dan, how are you feeling in its wake?
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
So this episode adapted a... I'll go ahead and use the word legendary moment from The Last of Us video games. When The Last of Us Part 2 dropped in 2020. And okay, spoilers starting now. One of the first big things to happen is that a character named Abby comes to Jackson, where Joel, Pedro Pascal, is living with Ellie, his surrogate daughter, Bella Ramsey. And she beats him to death with a golf club. And it's a big deal because he's the main character. And in a Ned Stark-esque twist, the main character is now dead on the floor. And the rest of the story is, what do we do in the aftermath? This, I can't overstate how much of a COVID isolation infused backlash this caused when it started in 2020. People were mad. Honestly, this backlash and the Game of Thrones season 8 backlash, about the same level of backlash.
Yeah.
They were both intense. Feelings got hurt. Things were said, Molotov cocktails were flung, at least in the vivid imagination of people who do this. Tweets were tweeted. It got rough.
Well, it was even worse than that. I would actually say it's maybe not as, you know, it's comparable in the video game world, this backlash. But I would say it was even worse in terms of the grotesqueness of the backlash, because people were sending the actress who voiced and performed Abby in the video game, Laura Bailey, who's a member of Critical Role. She's in Vox Machina. They were sending like death threats to her and her family because they were so mad that this character killed Joel, who people played for the entire first game and were looking forward to playing in the second game. And then he dies off in the first hour and a half of the second game. So yeah, it was a horrible backlash, and a lot of gamers were distraught and saying this was an awful game and they hated it. And like you said, Dan, it came out, I believe, like right at around the start of COVID.
It hadn't been that
during
long
during the heavily quarantined period of COVID. So people were just stuck at home with all their feelings and nowhere to vent them but the internet. It is a notable episode for the video game, and it's a notable episode for the show. And I think they deserve immense credit for not shying away from this, for not, you know, trying to keep Pedro Pascal around longer. Like, they killed the person who needed to die to take the story in a really interesting direction.
I mean, it was never... I can't imagine a world where they would have like changed. Can you? It's hard to imagine that.
I think
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think a lot of people were imagining that, because I've heard a lot of people say like, maybe they'll kill him later in the season. Maybe they'll string it out. And it's like the show has Neil Druckmann, who is one of the creative director. He's the creator of the games attached to it. And he's going to do his own story right. Right. I'm not surprised. You're not surprised. Right. I'm sure some people were surprised.
Of that, but I feel like it was the fact that there wasn't a giant backlash to this fact that this episode has been really, really lauded, I think is proof that people weren't, even the ones who were saying that, I don't know if I really believed it wholeheartedly,
they were in denial.
With their full chests.
Yeah.
My bigger question was, because this moment is so internet famous, what would it be like watching it on TV? Like, would it still be able to shock me? And the question is, it still hit pretty hard.
Yeah,
all the this is really an actor's show, or at least for some of the juiciest bits. It's kind of old fashioned in that way. Like, yeah, the scene is succeeds or fails on whether Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey, and Caitlin Dever, who plays Abby, can sell it. And they did. My favorite moment is, I just love full-throated expressions of bloody revenge. My favorite moment is after Abby stabs Joel through the neck with a broken golf, which is not in the game, by the way. They added that little bit. And then I just love Ellie on the floor saying, "You're going to die!" Expletive deleted. "I'm going to kill you!" Expletive deleted. Something just so fires up the blood about that. Really exciting and well-delivered, and looking forward to seeing what comes next. I see we are getting some peeps, some comments in there. Diane hated it. Love to hear from you, Diane, what you hated about it. Let's see. Dad Eraser thought they might have traded Joel and Tommy's story, they could have done that. But the point is, you got to kill someone you love.
It wouldn't have worked. Yeah, I mean, so if that happened and they killed off Tommy instead of Joel, one, that's the coward's move, in my opinion, because the bold swing of killing Joel is the entire, you know, fulcrum on which this season turns. Like that is the starting point for the story of The Last of Us Part Two. And it's Ellie's quest for revenge, essentially. If Tommy dies instead of Joel, one, they have no reason to kill Tommy. Like, why would they? They have a specific grudge against Joel for murdering a bunch of fireflies.
No. You rewrite it so Tommy takes the fall for Joel and says, like, "Yeah, I'm Joel. He's also a handsome, same DNA man." They could have mistaken for it.
That must be Joel. It looks just like this picture someone hand drew of him. But Ellie wouldn't have had, you know, it would have been Joel going on a quest for revenge. And that's just not as interesting as a young person like Ellie, who's at this formative point in her life. Like, what does she do? How does this change her? And Abby is the mirror for that, because obviously the show has front loaded Abby's backstory. So I do wonder if this is one reason, you know, I don't want to say there's less backlash to this scene on the show, because
there definitely is.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that is so many people knew it was coming when the game came out. No one knew it was coming. And I read that there were even some trailers that featured Joel more. So like it almost made people think they were going to play as Joel, and then they just didn't. But I think doing this was just the right choice. It was just the right choice for the series. And yeah, I think they really pulled it off.
So you thought it worked. I mean, I don't think it's any disagreement between us that they had to do this. And it seems to be working. Wizard Eye says that they were shocked. Robert Harris's wife doesn't know the games and they're liking it. You know what? It's kind of reminded me of, I've seen clips going around online of like someone recording their family members watching Joel's death and being like, "What? He's dead?" And the whole thing about changing up for Tommy, I feel like not enough shows have to this day have learned the lessons of Game of Thrones. Like, Game of Thrones, it succeeded for a whole lot of reasons, but every time they killed off a major character in a dramatic way, the main character, it just got more popular.
Yeah.
Like, Ned Stark died, it rose notoriety. The Red Wedding happened, Robb and Catelyn died, it rose notoriety. Jon Snow died, that one didn't stick, but it rose notoriety. That was like the biggest point up to that point. No one could shut up about that. Having something hugely unpredictable, like killing the main character, is still going against the grain. It's still shocking. Even after Game of Thrones, I feel like Game of Thrones was the exception. It broke the rules, but the rules are still there. Yeah. And so for The Last of Us to break the rules again, it still hits hard. And I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You wrote a really great piece about this that's up on winterscoming.net right now. And I do agree that, you know, not every show can do that, kill off the main character.
No. But
I think there's something really similar to Ned Stark with all of his young children and Joel with Ellie, where it's like the patriarch of these families, whether that's, you know, the Starks, very traditional family, or this found family in a post-apocalypse, that patriarch dying, and then the kids having to figure out what the hell they do with their life without their parental figure. And that's just such fertile ground to take the story in unexpected, interesting directions. Now, there is one comment I do want to point out. Dad Eraser does have an interesting comment here that I wondered this too, which is, and so this is a little bit of a spoiler for the game. In the game, Tommy really wants revenge too. He and Ellie are on a very similar pathway in the game. We don't know how the show is going to handle this. So Dad Eraser says, how is Tommy going to leave Jackson now? It's in shambles. And his show character doesn't strike me as a revenge actor. So I will say, this is a question I had after this episode too. In the game, Tommy is with Joel when he dies. In the show, Tommy's obviously in Jackson, which we're going to talk about because that was nuts, that whole Jackson sequence.
Yeah.
The hard home of Last of Us. This is a question I had too. And we're going to talk about it more as the season goes on, because I think that is a very, very legitimate question, is how can the show take Tommy on a similar path as the game? What will they have to change? Because here we see Tommy make a sacrifice. He throws himself in the line of fire for his family. It's a very different than in the game, where he witnesses his brother die. And then what does he do with that? Here we see him do this big heroic gesture for his wife, to try to save his wife. So it is going to be interesting to see how they navigate that.
I love that, because you and I have both seen more of the season. And, yes. I will say, I'm not going to give anything away, but Dead Eraser, they get there. Probably should just leave it there for now.
Yeah, I will say I had that exact same question after this episode. So I think it is a very, very fair question to ask.
But I also think, because we talk about this on the show a lot, when you adapt something, where is the line between adapting, changing, streamlining, all things you should do, and just changing it completely, making a new story?
Yeah.
To me, Joel's got to die and Ellie's got to go on a revenge quest. That's the heart.
That is that is what this story is about this season.
But I mean, Tommy leaves or doesn't leave or has another reason for leaving, that kind of thing. To me, that's on the side of, you can fiddle with that if you think it's necessary, and you'll probably be fine.
I have a feeling they're going to have a pretty big arc for Tommy across this season.
Do you have a feeling?
Yeah, next season. You know, because Tommy does play an interesting role in Ellie's quest for revenge. And he's a mirror for her in some ways. So I'm curious to see how the show gets him there. Valorius has some fun things here. Which was more painful for you, Oberyn Martell, the character Pedro Pascal played on Game of Thrones, who got his head smushed, or Joel, the character he plays on The Last of Us, who got his head smushed? Which death hit you harder, Dan?
I guess Oberyn, because it was so much grosser.
That's fair. It was.
Can we talk about the battle? So while
let's do that.
Abby is murdering Joel with a golf club. Tommy is back in Jackson defending the city from a giant zombie attack. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have what I'm going to guess is a bit of an against the grain take on this.
You hated it.
Because I didn't hate it. Obviously, it's entertaining to watch.
It was.
Zombies stormed the gates.
They did.
Snowy, beautiful. I can't even begin to think about how this was like to film in the snowy cold. Reminded me of Hard Home, as a lot of folk have already said, because it just did. They're like pounding on the gates. They're breaking through. Flamethrowers are fun. Very much mini boss vibes. My question was, I guess, why did you need it? Because look, they spent way more money and time on this than they did the Abby kills Joel scene. Abby kills Joel scene was what I was here for. That was the more powerful, impactful thing. And I know that this isn't the thing you should think about when watching a TV show, but I guess I can't help it. We're going years between seasons of these big tentpole shows. They're costing more and more money. And part of me is if you don't, especially if you already have this really legendary set piece in your episode and you don't need to spend tons of money and spend tons of time making a big battle scene, I don't know. Why do it? I liked it. But I did have a question of I'm not sure why it was needed when you had like the more effective, cheaper thing that you were getting to anyway.
Yeah. So I think
the dogs were great. I did love the dogs. Favorite part. Those are some good boys. Don't throw us out of those.
Plant yeah. Zombies. Yeah. The dogs were cool. There were a lot of elements of this siege that were cool. It really did remind me of Hard Home, which Hard Home is my favorite battle from Game of Thrones. So that is high praise for me that there's just something about the structure of this, the tension and the stages of the battle that really reminded me of Hard Home more than any other Game of Thrones battle. I think there are a few reasons this was, if not totally necessary, justifiable. You're obviously right. The main event of this episode is going to be Joel. Neil Druckmann, one of the showrunners, has talked about why they decided to do this battle on the Last of Us podcast and a few other places, that essentially in the game, it talks about how Jackson is attacked periodically by raiders or infected, and they have all these methods and plans for how to deal with that. In the show, they decided to show what that would look like because television's a more visceral medium of what you see, and you know it's a different story when you have the 7-hour season of television versus a 50-hour game. You can kind of drop in a lot more of those little tidbits that you may not necessarily have time for on the show. So they wanted to blow this out and show what an attack like that would be like and how it would affect the town, and without getting into spoilers, how it affects the town is important. I do think whether they needed it or not, I think it really worked for that reason. And this is the other part of why it reminded me of Hard Home. That's actually the exact same sort of thing Game of Thrones did with Hard Home that was so notable. It was the first time that it really went off book to say, here's the thing we've heard happened in the books, which is that there were a bunch of wildlings at Hard Home and then suddenly they're gone. And we can only assume that they've been taken by the White Walkers. The show said we can make that into a big, cool set piece that will do a bunch of heavy lifting for us and really wow people. And The Last of Us kind of did the same thing, where it's like, here's a thing we've heard about in the game. We can turn that into a big, spectacular scene. So I think that's a big part of it. The other part, and this is a long game spoiler for the game, so I guess turn off your ears. I'm not going to talk specific plot points, but we don't really see Jackson a whole lot after Ellie heads out to her next destination. So if they were going to do anything like this with Jackson, if they were going to emphasize Jackson more, this is really the only chance they have to do it, in my opinion. So that's my very long-winded answer to that.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I thought it was entertaining, yeah. but I don't know. I just think cost benefit analysis. If I get that you built a cool set, but you don't, doesn't mean you have to use it like this. I did like it though. It was fun.
Yeah.
I see some people commenting too, that it gave them kind of built in reasons for this and that. And I noticed that they did address some of the critiques during the backlash. I remember one of the critiques during the backlash was like, why would Joel say his name to people? Why would he introduce himself? That's stupid of him. And here they change as though like Dina just kind of says Joel offhandedly and Abby overhears it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Cause it was criticism like he wouldn't be that stupid. I don't really agree with that. But yeah, they thought about it. It does build in some more reasons. It does build in some reasons why. Well, I shouldn't spoil things. You'll see next week. It was a good episode of TV. It seemed a little showy for my taste. the battle. And maybe in a place where you might be able to narrow things down, give me another episode, or have less time between seasons rather than do this big battle thing. But of course it was fun. It wasn't bad. It was good. I liked it. Flamethrower, dogs, reasons, all good stuff.
Totally. One other thing I'll say about that is I don't think cutting this battle would have given us another episode. I think they probably very not. So I have seen the whole season and I won't talk about the flow of the season, but it is very obvious to me as someone who's played the game, and I know you've played the game too, and you'll see when you get there, they made a choice to end where they wanted to end this season. It's not like House of the Dragon where they were like, oopsie, we don't have the budget to do the Battle of the Gullet anymore, and David Zaslav wants us to cut episodes. this is a 7-episode season because they thought this was the best flow for this portion of the story, and ending in a different place wouldn't have worked as well. So I am curious to see how people feel as it progresses, because that's the one thing that I'm sad about is it is only 7 episodes, but we've got a lot of good stuff ahead. So
yeah, I want to talk about more, but obviously we can't. But
next week, tune in next week.
Come back every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST, 3 Eastern. Here to talk about all this stuff: Last of Us, fantasy, sci-fi, and maybe The Wheel of Time, another TV show that had its season finale, its season 3 finale, last Thursday, and that we've been talking about a lot here at WIC, just because.
So good.
I mean, look, we started as a Game of Thrones fan site. We have a weakness for high fantasy, and just if you want to get to my heart, at the end of the day, you're going to want to give me a TV show or movie about a person who goes pew 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 when things shoot from their fingers.
And which didn't really happen in Game of Thrones, but whatever.
Well, fine. I had horses and swords and dragons. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll do a close second. I'll skip to that part. I really loved the ending battle between Moiraine and Lanfear when they are battling in the desert. A true just pew, pew, pew wizard battle of summoning the one power to shoot fireballs and do shields. It was just very fantasy-esque fantasy, which is one of the things we talked about might is a great selling point for the Wheel of Time, and also something that kind of holds it back a bit, because the kind of entry point is a little higher of a bar to clear. You have to accept that you're going to get wizards doing wizardy things more or less to enjoy the show. But if you can, there's a lot of rich stuff in here.
Yeah. And I mean, that is just such an ingrained part of the Wheel of Time book series that, like, it's to the show's credit, I think, that they weren't like, let's tone down the magic. Like, that, this is a thing Game of Thrones did pretty consistently through its run, was let's tone down the really fantastical stuff. Because George R. R. Martin, like, it's a grounded book series, but he still sprinkled in lots of little fantastical things. And the show kind of shied away from those things at times.
I think to its benefit, just FYI.
I think... Yeah, I mean, we can debate about Lady Stoneheart for a whole episode.
I guess we could.
But I think you're right, largely to its benefit. But I think that would not work for the Wheel of Time.
No.
Because the magic is largely, like, it's much more what the series is about, what the story is about. Yeah. Here's a man with magic, and will that make him lose his mind and go mad and kill everyone? So, yeah, this was the third season. And I think, obviously, it's the best season. Like, it's not even close.
No,
and I liked, especially season 2. I liked both seasons. I thought season 1 had issues, and some of them I forgive because of COVID and losing Barney Harris partway through and all that sort of stuff. There was the actor who played Matt. Season 2, I thought, was very much a step in the right direction and had some really excellent episodes, like Egwene's torture episode with the Shanchan. Season 3... there's not a weak episode in season 3. There's not a low point.
And several really good ones.
Several really good ones that are ranked, you know, not that IMDb is the be all end all, but they have rankings similar to like a Game of Thrones episode, specifically the 4th episode, which was Ruidian, and the 8th episode, which was the finale, which I got to say, the finale, like, I wasn't torn when I watched it the first time necessarily, but it's a dark episode. Like, our heroes lose a lot in the finale, and it also made some kind of controversial choices. Probably the biggest of those was killing off Swan Sanchi, played by Sophie Okonedo, who dies in this coup at the White Tower, where now the Aes Sedai have a new leader, who is Elida, played by Shoreag Doshlu from The Expanse, and she's petty and vindictive and self-serving and just happy to have the chair she thinks should have been hers all along and kill the rival who took it from her. What did you think of this turn, Dan? Because this was, the coup is in the books. Swan's death is not.
I mean, I'll say up front that when I saw it, I mean, it hit hard, just that,
yeah,
that simple Baroque image of a long shot, we're back a ways, and we just see her body, and we notice, oh, she ain't got no head. Like, yeah. But it doesn't really linger on it. That is good stuff. That's good filmmaking. Like, that's good directing.
The direction was excellent.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I thought it worked. It does. You want your turning points to feel like turning points. Like, you want your big moments to feel like big moments. And we've always said that in the Wheel of Time with this show, you can feel that the guy who makes it, Rafe Judkins, really loves the books, but he's not so tied to them, but he's not willing to shift things where he needs. But it's always in service of preserving as much of the heart of the story as possible. I think this is a good example of that. I haven't read all the books. I'm like partway through the series, so I don't know exactly how it's going to play down. I was a little worried that, I don't know. I thought, like, okay, so they're making some big changes here. I know that Samael also dies. He doesn't die in the book at this point.
That's the one I'm more curious about.
And I was like, okay, will people hate this? Will they hit back and say, oh, they're ruining the books, they're ruining the fantasy series, they're going off book? And they really didn't. I mean, the ratings have been extremely strong. People really seem to have loved the episode. They want more. The hype is there. So I think it proves some things that I've said for a while, that A, I do think the changes are made in service of the greater story to keep it as close as possible, to keep the heart of it intact. I think you can feel that fidelity and that love. And if you feel that, you're willing to overlook some changes.
Yeah.
And B, I think it's the other thing of, if you change something and it's better, I'm fine. The reason I bitch about House of the Dragon so much is they change things. I don't like them. but if you change things and it works, go ahead and change things. It's fine. I don't mind that.
Yeah. I think the main thing I have seen some pushback or some people upset about was Siwan's death, because Siwan does, putting on the book reader hat for a second, Siwan does have a long story after this. She basically is in the books right up until the end. And Rafe Judkins has talked about why they decided to kill Siwan off here. And part of that is, like, the show can't just keep all these actors around. Like, like the books, it's like you can have 47 people in a scene. You can't really do that in a show. And it doesn't make sense to have Academy Award winners or nominees like Sophie Okonedo just, like, hanging out in the background, watching what's going on, not really having great material. Because a big part of Siwan's story after this is going to another part of the world where she meets a person named Gareth Byrne. She becomes his washerwoman, trying to stay incognito. And there's part of it that's like Siwan being humbled and all this stuff. And the show is still going to include some of these plot lines. They've said that they have plans for who they'll give them to, because there are multiple characters involved in them. It is a little redundant. Like, they don't necessarily need Siwan specifically to do them, but, like, it made more sense for them to give her a big exit rather than have her stick around to do, like, a dude's laundry for a season.
And it felt like a big exit, didn't it? That speech was great. I've seen it quoted. It was chills inducing. It gave the actress a really good showcase. I don't know. I was not upset by this.
Yeah, me neither. I think it was a bold choice. Yeah, I mean, I was upset. I was sad. I was
I was upset in the way that the show wanted me to be upset. I wasn't upset in, like, the metatextual way.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of queer people were upset about this because Siwan and Moraine, like, their relationship is a big part of the show, and a lot of people really loved it. And the thing is, like, the show built this out a lot, you know? Like, that relationship is there in the books, but not really by this point in the books. Like, it's really when they were younger they had a relationship. So Judkins, he's been getting some pointed questions about this, like, on an Instagram AMA, and his response was basically, we always knew we were going to have this sort of outcome for these characters. Mm-hmm. They were never going to get a happy ending. So it's like, we can either make them lesbians and show their love story or not. And we think it was the better choice to have shown the love that they had. And I totally agree with that. I thought it added so much more dimension to their relationship.
To both of them,
To both of them, So, yeah, great stuff. And, yeah, Zach, I defy you. Like, great wonderful monologue.
I'm the daughter of everyone. I defy you. I defy you, too. Down with the light. Yeah. I want to see what happens next.
Yeah. Now, of course,
I also, the one thing I got to mention is I really just love the last shot of Rand surrounded by power.
So good.
And then Egwene telling him to let go of it because, you know, the magic power drives him insane, whatever. Mm-hmm. And him just, just looking at the camera, the last shot being like his face being like, maybe I will, maybe I won't. You don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that is a great example of an ending that leaves a lot of things yet to be explored, but doesn't feel like a cliffhanger. Like, the story is resolved. He's won the Aiel over. He's the Karakarn, yada, yada, yada. But we have this question of, what is his destiny? Like, is he going to destroy or save the world? Like, that's how you end a season, man.
Yeah, like, that totally. Is
a chills-inducing kind of thing. I loved that.
Yeah,
which
that final
shot. I really want the show to be renewed for more seasons, which we don't know if it will be yet.
I am just like, come on, Amazon. Come on, Sony. I know JordanCon is this week, this weekend. I don't think the show really has a big presence there this year, but I'm like, you could drop the announcement while JordanCon's happening and there would be much rejoicing. I agree with you. That is a way to end a season. And I love that it called back to the premiere episode where Rand he's holding the magic. He blew up the mirrors when he was attacked while he was with Egwene in the season premiere. And she shouts that same thing. Rand, stop. Rand, let it go. And then the screen cuts to black and we see that he did, obviously. Here it just lingers on him. It cuts to black and we're left with, oh, he doesn't look like he's gonna let it go. He doesn't look like he's listening to her anymore. That's what a great note to end the season on. There are a few other things I want to talk about quickly with this episode. I saw Zach asking, do you think they might introduce more Forsaken in season 4? Wolfdream saying, yeah, no one cares about Samael. An answer to the first, yes, I think we will definitely see another Forsaken, at least one more, if not multiple more in season 4. I imagine we'll get Greyendal in season 4, who's one of the female Forsaken who's been mentioned. It's around the time in the story for her to make her entrance. You know, she won't really step to the forefront, but think about like what this season did with Robin, where we saw him a little bit, and this isn't really a spoiler, he'll be a lot more central to what I expect is going to happen next season. The fifth book deals a lot with Robin. I imagine we'll get that for another Forsaken next season, especially because, as Wolfdream said, they killed Samael. I'm a little torn on Samael. I won't lie. Samael was never my favorite in the book series, but he sticks around for a while. He's kind of like a thorn in Rand's side for like 4 books, where he's just like doing annoying shit because he's taken over this nation, Ilion. He's manipulating Rand's enemies to do annoying crap. He's kind of like the most... Yeah, I keep saying annoying. He's the most annoying Forsaken in terms of like Rand's trying to do stuff. And Samael is not a huge threat, but he's always just freaking there, messing things up a little bit. And there is a scene eventually, and I can spoil this because he's dead now in the show, where in the 7th book, Rand hunts down Samael. He chases him to Shadar Logoth, which is the city where Matt gets the dagger in the first season, and Rand kills him there, finally. So it is a big question to me. They kind of closed off a few different Forsaken arcs with the death of Samael. They hinted at one of them, Asmodian, who is a Forsaken Rand captures in the books, who teaches him how to use the One Power. They made it seem like Samael was going to fulfill that role, and then they killed him off. And then they also closed off, which is funny, like they knew what they were doing. They were like, yeah, we'll make them think they know what's going to happen. And then psych, Samael's dead. But they also closed off all of the other storylines with Samael. So I'm curious if they're going to give that to another Forsaken. They're going to cut it entirely because they have 14 or 15 books to fit into, hopefully, Amazon, 8 seasons of television.
Yep.
Lots of questions. But I care, Wolfdream. I care about Samael, but only a little bit because he's a little guy.
All right. I can't really weigh in on much of this. I will say I have not read the books with Graniel, have you say it in them?
Greyendal.
Even reading about her, I'm already like, this is going to be a great scenery chewing role for some.
Absolutely.
For some divalicious diva who works fiercely and fiercely works. So that'll be good whenever that happens.
I think, and like, if anyone in the comments knows about this. Feel free to shout me out if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure I saw on like the AMA, one of the AMAs that Judkins did, he was asked, who's your dream cast for Grayandall? And he might have been joking about this, but I'm pretty sure he said Lizzo.
Ooh, Lizzo, fun.
So like that's the kind of presence of a Grayandall that we're looking for. I've seen a lot of people say Nicola Coogan, I'm sure I'm saying her name wrong, from Bridgerton, is another like dream cast for Grayandall. So yeah, I she's going to be a big one. Whenever the show introduces her, it'll be just like Lanfear and Moat Gideon, where it's like, oh, here's another force of nature in our series.
Just, this is going to be awesome. So just keeping our fingers crossed, please renew the show.
Yeah.
Okay. As usual, we're talking so much, we're going to have to compress some things, but
as
that's what we do. We're great at this. We're so good at this. Watch every weekend on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. CST.
Season hands. Practiced, okay. If you will.
Are you watching anything else, Dan? And what are you watching out there in the comments?
Beyond Wah and The Last of Us. So I'm watching the Predator Badlands trailer on freaking repeat. That came out a little too late for us to really, you know, put pictures of it in the show, but that dropped this afternoon. It looks so freaking cool. It's the next live action Predator from Dan Trachtenberg, who did Prey. The Predator is the main character. It's on an alien planet where one is going on their first hunt. Chef's kiss, November 7th, and it's going to be in IMAX. Beyond that, the only other thing I can say I'm watching, I can't really talk about it at all yet. I am watching Murderbot, which is the new sci-fi series from Apple TV Plus based on the books from Martha Wells. That comes out next month. So I'm watching it a little bit early, and I'm very excited to talk about it once I can. What about you, Dan? You said you watched Andor.
I did. I already did, didn't I? And Wolf Dream watched two seasons of Silo. We enjoyed Silo here. Daniel did. I'd actually see.
Yes.
But I watched Andor, first three episodes. This show was a surprise in the first season because it's a Star Wars show. I want to say that's good, but that's too flippant. It's a Star Wars show that the phrase like Star Wars for adults gets tossed around a lot, kind of flippantly. This really is Star Wars for adults, which makes it so different. It honestly doesn't feel very much like Star Wars to me.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. It's slow. It's subtle. It's delicate. It has characters with depth and dimension, and it watches them do things like make plans and build and flatter people. And there's not a lightsaber in sight. There's no kind of goofy cantinas where aliens play the space keyboards. And this is all great for a show. The new episodes are very good. You already knew they were very good, didn't you? Like, we all know they're good. It's a Star Wars show focused on human frailty. The first two episodes are Cassian Andor trying to make contact with this rebel band, but communications are screwed up and they don't know he's coming and they assume he might be a spy. And then the rebel band starts fighting each other over food, and then they are in a turf war, and then Cassian is one of their hostages. This is just, there's a scene, that my favorite scene of all three episodes was Cyril, my favorite imperial bureaucrat, with Deidre, his new girlfriend or whatever they are, like a dinner with Cyril's mother. And it's this incredibly awkward Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf type thing. And it's like, this there's nothing else in anywhere in Star Wars remotely like this. It's adult. It's melancholy. It's full of these like little weird, pitiful adult emotions held over from disturbing childhoods. And I like it, but I got to be honest, this show does go so far away from kind of the core whiz bang. What's the person I'm looking for? Who cares? Okay, whiz bang essence of Star Wars. That it really, I don't really feel like it's a Star Wars show. Like a stormtrooper comes on, and I'm like, oh right, we're in Star Wars universe. But it's great. But it feels like something different. But something really, really good. Like something that's very concerned with the machinery of fascism.
Yeah.
And the sacrifices needed to fight it. It just asked deeper questions than Star Wars usually does. Not that Star Wars is bad. You don't have to ask deep questions to be a great movie or show. Star Wars is a classic and it's wonderful and it's great. This show is
concerned with, I think, other things than the main Star Wars series usually is.
Man.
So, George Lucas said he based Star Wars on this old serial of like Flash Gordon. That's the one I wanted to say.
Okay.
The whiz bang Flash Gordon-esque essence of Star Wars. This is like nowhere, anywhere in the building is that in Andor. Yeah. It's more like Dune meets, I don't know, some House of Cards. I never watched it, but I imagine it's Dune meets House of Cards.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely hyping me up. And that is interesting because obviously the wonder is a big part of Star Wars DNA. But listening to you describe Andor season two, and obviously I've seen season one, I loved it. I'm excited to watch season two, but I understand what you mean about it being so far away from that sense of wonder that it's almost like, is this even the same thing? And it almost feels like this is, you know, Star Wars has always kind of had a little bit of that push and pull where it is like a sense of wonder. It is made for kids, like George Lucas has said this a lot.
All of us.
For the kids and all of us. But then you get to the prequel movies, which a lot of people didn't like when they first came out, but are being viewed a lot more kindly with age. And like the most sophisticated thing to me about the prequel movies is the progression of the Empire's rise, where it sure. starts with a trade dispute with an admittedly goofy alien and then grows to this point where Chancellor Palpatine is voted to get supreme power. Then he's voted to become an emperor. So it's like there's that one really iconic line about like this is how democracy dies with thunderous applause. But like that's the sort of spirit that Andor is capturing, where it's like, yes, there's Star Wars, but like you said, the machinery of fascism and how it works. Like George Lucas also was interested in this. So it feels like,
yeah,
like even though he wasn't doing what Andor's doing. To me, that
I
feels
think the
like
main difference between the prequels and Andor is that Andor is
Jar Jar Binks.
Kind of as an exemplar, Andor is a lot more subtle than the prequel movies.
Of course.
And a lot more delicate. Like, you're right. The prequels did have this theme of fascism bad, but it was like using like a sledgehammer to like pound it in. Andor's more like a little scalpel. But
yeah,
in all of us. But you're right.
Yeah.
there is a through line, but it's not just the themes. It's the style, too. Like nothing in Star Wars has ever been this subtle.
Yeah. I mean, Tony Gilroy, you wrote about this recently. He's out here saying like this is the best work he's ever done in his career. And like Tony Gilroy's had a long career of really good stuff. So that is saying something that like he's now late in his career and he's like, this Star Wars show is the best thing I've ever made. And it's like, from the way people are talking about it, it sounds like it. And I love the structure that they chose for this season, where it's three episodes. Each one is like a couple of days in the life of Cassian Andor, and then it's going to jump forward a year. So that is bold, making a lot of bold choices. Bold choices is the theme of our episode today.
Hey, if you want to make waves in life, choose boldly. And let Tony Gilroy be your leader. Flash Gordon. That was the name of the gentleman. All right. Yeah. Should we go on Wick News lightning round, where we go over a bunch of stories that we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second takes on them? And if we should do that, are you ready for fully half of them to be about Star Wars? Because a lot of things broke in that area this week.
I am ready to give you my bold Star Wars opinions, because I have heard that is only opinions worth having. So let's do it. Even though this first one is not about Star Wars at all.
Not a lot of them are about Star Wars. You'll see in a second. I'll boldly ask you first this one. Daniel, just give me your feelings when you hear this. Free association. Finn Wolfhard, who plays Mike in Stranger Things, said he was very confused and sad, but also very happy with the Stranger Things finale.
Makes total sense. Okay. You're closing out a big chapter of your life here that he's been on since he was a little tiny kid. Now he's a grown ass young man, and the show's coming to an end. I think it should instill all of those emotions. So I like it. And I hope it makes all of us very, maybe not confused, but sad and also very happy. All right, Dan. Speaking of things that make me feel confused on a spiritual level, The Sandman season 2 is coming out on Netflix on July 3rd. There will be 6th episode. And then on July 24th, there will be 5 episodes to end the series.
Yeah, and there's talk about like a secret 12th because they had a secret one last time too. But we'll see. The Sandman, interesting. What they did have a secret one last time. Don't you make that face at me? Made by Neil Gaiman, the original. Neil Gaiman's in a lot of hot water now, sexual assault allegations. So this is the last season of the show. I enjoyed the first season. I enjoy the books. I'll probably enjoy this season. That's really all there is to say. We'll get to it when we get to it. Okay. Begin the Star Wars barrage. Daniel, the Star Wars celebration happened in Japan this past weekend. And they talked about a new Star Wars movie called Star Wars Starfighter coming out in 2027, starring Ken himself, Ryan Gosling.
Will it come out in 2027?
Yeah,
you know, this is the thing with Star Wars. So this is supposed to be set after the sequel trilogy. They've just burned so much trust when it comes to announcing movies that it's similar to, like, there was a Wheel of Time video game announcement. And I was like, I'll believe it when I see it from these people who would love to announce things they don't do. Kind of how I feel about Lucasfilm with movies at this point. So,
yeah, I agree.
Sorry, Lucasfilm.
You did it yourself.
All right. Here's one that we have concrete confirmation is a real thing. And that's that Rory McCann, the Hound himself from Game of Thrones. We have our first look at him as Baylan Skoll in Ahsoka season 2, replacing the late, great Ray Stevenson.
A cool choice. Rory McCann, we all love him as the Hound on Game of Thrones. I thought Ahsoka was good. Not great, not bad. It's good. It's good. It's good. And I love the idea of him acting again. He was always seemed like a really particular actor. Like, he was just made for the Hound. Didn't really do much apart from it, except for Hot Fuzz. Yeah, I'm that's gonna work, and I'll probably watch him in that, see what he can do with it. Good for you, the Hound.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big shoes to fill. I'm Big curious shoes. To see what he does.
Do you think these will happen? They announced 2 new Star Wars animated series: The Ninth Jedi, a spinoff of that Star Wars Visions animated show, and Maul, Shadow Lord, starring Sam Witwer as Maul.
One can never have too much Maul in their life. Yeah, these will happen, I'm sure. I think Star Wars has been probably more consistent with its animated shows than anything else really over the years. Like, it has a long history of animated television shows at this point. So, yeah, I don't know that I will be watching either of these, but I'm psyched for people who are psyched for them.
Work.
All right, and carrying on the never-ending Star Wars train of things. Oh, this is a show, so maybe it will happen. It's more likely than a movie. Apparently, Lost co-creator Carlton Cuse is making a new Star Wars show with his son, Nick Cuse, who is also a writer, filmmaker, etc.
I think it's interesting that they seem to be winding, like, Andor's ending earlier than they originally wanted it to. And I thought for a while, oh, perhaps they're just going to narrow down their... And The Mandalorian is going to end with a movie, probably. So I thought maybe they're going to wind down their Star Wars shows. But no, they're like making a bunch of new ones. So I guess they want to replace the outgoing crop with a new crop rather than like just really have something that lasts a long time. I'll see it when I see it. Okay, we're done with Outlander.
Keep those Disney Plus numbers up.
Boom. All right, Daniel, we're done with Star Wars.
Yes.
Outlander, the final season, they shot multiple endings. So not even the actors know what happens. Do you believe them?
I believe them. I mean, I believe they have a multiple choice test in front of them, and they know the endings it could be, but they don't know how it will be edited together. And I think that's a really interesting, beautiful choice, especially for a show like this that has been running since the heyday of Game of Thrones. It deserves a good send off. Its fans deserve a good send off. I hope that it satisfies people. Going to be sad to see that one go, even though I haven't watched it in a while. All right. Here's a rumor Dan, if this rumor is malarkey, I'm going to be so sad because I really loved the movie this is about. Mm-hmm. So this is the rumor straight from the streets or wherever this rumor came from that maybe you'll tell us about. Apparently, Carl Urban may be returning for a Dread series made by the same team from who made The Boys.
Yeah, I saw that movie. I'd watch that show. He could do amazingly expressive things with only his mouth visible and his eyes completely covered. That was a really good performance. And it was a really high acting show. It sounds up somewhere like The Boys creator's alley. I'd watch it. I don't know where the rumor came from. I forget. But it's a rumor. It's real. It's real that people are talking about it. And I would watch it if it ever happens. But will it? I don't know. It's a rumor. You just said. And that is our show. Thank you for watching, everybody. We have been Dan and Dan. We have been Take the Black. We do this every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 on the East Coast, and noon on the West Coast, and 1 up in the mountains. We're also available to download wherever you can download podcasts, be it Google Play, YouTube Music, iTunes, other places, whatever. Wherever there are podcasts, we're there. So give us a like. Give us a subscribe. Leave a comment. I see you already got a head start on that. Thanks for watching. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Tell your kids, either your real kids or the children inside us all. Goodbye. See you next time.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Hey, baseball fans, go yard with BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Enjoy top odds on your favorite home run bets, fast and convenient ways to play same-game parlays, special boosts and tokens, and so much more. From the first pitch to the game-winning fireworks, there are more ways than ever to supercharge your excitement. Download the BetMGM app and get your piece of MLB action. BetMGM is an official partner of Major League Baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER available in the U.S. For New York, 8778. HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. First bet offers for new customers only. All other promotions for existing customers. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need. And 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.